Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio from Monday, May 3rd, 2021. Here are some of your headlines. Funeral service for Andrew Brown Jr., a black man shot and killed by police 2 weeks ago in North Carolina. Reverend Al Sharpton giving the eulogy saying, "This must stop. Enough is enough. How many funerals do we have to have before we tell Congress and the Senate that you have to do something about these times?" On infrastructure spending, while talks continue between Republicans and Democrats, Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell today predicting not one member of his party will support what Democratic President Joe Biden is proposing. President Biden and First Lady Jill Biden pushing for the president's education spending proposals. He calls them human infrastructure, visits to schools on the Virginia coast. And Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in Great Britain ahead of the G7 summit as leaders will be meeting there next month. Today, he says reports of a prisoner exchange with Iran between the U.S. and Iran and Britain, not true. Mourners gathering at a church in Elizabeth City, North Carolina, for the funeral service of Andrew Brown Jr., black man shot and killed by police a couple of weeks ago as the police attempted to serve drug-related search and arrest warrants. Independent autopsy commissioned by the family saying Brown was shot 5 times, including once in the back of the head. There have been nightly street protests in that city. The eulogy today given by civil rights activist Reverend Al Sharpton, who has given a number of eulogies at several funerals over the past year for black men killed by police.
Before we could get through one 24-hour cycle after the conviction of Derek Chauvin for the lynching by knee of George Floyd, a policeman killed Andrew Brown Jr. A day that we were getting ready to go to the wake of Dante Wright. From Dante Wright to Andrew Brown to Breonna Taylor to Ahmaud Arbery to Rashid Brooks to George Floyd, all of this happening during a pandemic, all within a year. And you want to talk about everything other than what the times demand we talk about. I watched the other night the president make his first address to the joint session of Congress. And then I watched the rebuttal by the senator from South Carolina. Seemed something awkward to me, where a white president talked about white supremacy and a black senator said there, America's not racist, seemed a little strange to me. Now, everybody in America is not racist. But are you talking about whether the practice of America is racist or the people? Because the practice of America was built on racism. It was against the law for us to read and write. It was against the law for us to marry. It was against the law for us to name our children after us. We were brought here to serve and never get paid. That's how the country was built. I rode through Elizabeth City and saw a wall where they had an institution that was founded in 1847, right here in Elizabeth City. In 1847, by law, we were chattel slaves in Elizabeth City. What do you mean America is not racist? America was started off racism. It has been blacks and whites, like the black and white young folk that been marching for Andrew, that made it go from racism to where it is today. This family don't hate nobody. This family is black and white. The question is, what you do on our side of town, you still don't do on the other side of town. Today, Blacks are unemployed twice more than whites. Today, we get the worst education. Today, we get the worst health care. Today, we are the ones that can't get bank loans, or today we can't get business loans. We still have a racism in a systematic way in America.
Reverend Al Sharpton in Elizabeth City, North Carolina, at the funeral service of Andrew Brown Jr. A judge ruled last week that the full police body cam video of the shooting can be viewed by the family but not by the public until the official investigation is complete. Sharpton saying today, "I know a con game when I see it. Release the whole tape and let the folks see what happened to Andrew Brown." Now to negotiations over a federal infrastructure spending package, part one. The Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell today saying he expects no Republican will support President Biden's $2.3 trillion bill. The president calls the American Jobs Plan. But a good number of Republicans would be open to a bill of about $600 billion, which has been proposed by some Senate Republicans. Senator McConnell was at the University of Louisville.
$4.1 trillion on top of what we've already done. There's more money in there for electric cars than there are for roads and bridges and ports and water lines and all of which broadband, which we would all concede is infrastructure. A whole lot of the rest of this money is for a whole lot of things that have nothing to do with infrastructure. So I think I can pretty safely say none of my Republican colleagues are going to support a $4.1 trillion infrastructure package, only part of which is for infrastructure. So what we have offered is to support a more narrow proposal. And Shelley Moore Capito from West Virginia, who I asked to head this up, has laid out about a $600 billion plan that absolutely affects what all of us would agree is infrastructure and does not revisit the 2017 tax bill to pay for it, which leads to the other issue. The new administration wants to undo what was the most significant domestic accomplishment other than judges of the previous 4 years, and that was the 2017 tax bill, which made us competitive internationally with corporate tax rates. They want to raise the corporate rate to the highest in the world, which will put us right back where we were with offshore and jobs. So how to pay for the infrastructure bill on our side is we're not going to revisit the 2017 tax bill. We're happy to look for traditional infrastructure pay-fors, which means the users participate. Sorry for the lengthy answer, but it's a huge bill. There's no short answer to it. Summing it up, we're happy to take a look at an infrastructure package that's what basically both sides agree is infrastructure, and we're not willing to pay for it by undoing the 2017 tax bill.
The Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell at the University of Louisville Center for Predictive Medicine holding a news conference after his speech. He mentioned $4.1 trillion. He is adding the second part of President Biden's proposal, $1.8 trillion for universal pre-K, affordable child care, free community college, what the president calls the American Families Plan. The Hill newspaper writes that a group of Senate Republicans, led by Senator Shelley Moore Capito, proposing that $568 billion package. President Biden and Capito talked late last week, both expressing an interest to keep negotiating and potentially setting up another White House meeting. President Biden was on the road today in the Tidewater area of Virginia promoting his infrastructure plans, both of them. First stop was Yorktown. He and the First Lady Jill Biden joining him, dropping in on a fifth grade elementary school class. And then it was to Norfolk and Tidewater Community College. First Lady Jill Biden is a community college professor, and she spoke about that part of the president's spending plan.
Our schools accept everyone, regardless of age or race or income or family legacy. And they offer classes that are flexible, so students don't have to choose between work and school. They train for real world jobs, like I just saw in the lab. They tailor to the communities they serve. or they provide a strong foundation for those students who want to go on to, you know, to a four-year degree. Community college graduates provide more security for their families. They invest in their local schools and businesses, and they bring needed skills to our workforce, helping us to meet the challenges of the 21st century. That's why we need 2 years of free community college. Thank you, Mr. President. And when we give all Americans the chance to learn from preschool to community college, it will create a ripple effect that is felt by every single one of us. There is no greater investment than we can make than in education, as we all know. And we must provide support and resources so that our students can make it across the finish line. Joe knows that. He saw it in his classes when he taught law school. And he's heard it from me every single day when I finish teaching my classes.
First Lady Jill Biden, along with President at Tidewater Community College, Norfolk, Virginia. When the president spoke, he defended raising taxes on the wealthy and corporations to pay for his spending proposals.
I think it's about time we start giving tax breaks and tax credits to working class families and middle class families instead of just the very wealthy. And here's what the American Family Plan doesn't do. It doesn't add a single penny to our deficit. It's paid for by making sure corporate America and the wealthiest 1% just pay their fair share. I come from the corporate capital of the world. More corporations are incorporated in the state of Delaware than all the rest of the nation combined. And I'm not anti-corporate, but it's about time they start paying their fair share. It's about making a choice. You know, we have out there this year, you have 50 corporations making, you know, $40 billion that didn't pay a single penny in taxes, not a single penny. I don't want to punish anybody, but everybody should chip in. Everybody should pay something along the road here. The choice is about who the economy serves. And so I plan on giving tax breaks to the working class folks and making everybody pay their fair share. Here's an example of that choice. If you ask the top 1% to pay the same tax rate they paid in 2001 when George Bush was president, that would generate $13 billion a year. Now, that's enough for us to take around 11 of that $13 billion and provide for 2 years of community college free for every student in America. So what's fair? Go from 36 to 39.6% like it used to be and be able to take care of every, what's better? Just think about it in terms of what's better for America, not Democrat, Republican, individual. What's going to grow America more? What's going to grow America more? What's going to make us more competitive, stronger? What's going to make us better educated? So for folks at home, I'd like to ask a question. Do we want to give the wealthiest people in America another tax cut? Or do you want to give every high school graduate the ability to earn a community college degree on their way to good paying jobs or on the way to 4 years of school in industries of the future? Healthcare, IT, cybersecurity, you name it.
President Joe Biden at a community college in Norfolk, Virginia. This is Washington Today. When the president finished his speech, a reporter called out a question, and the president stopped and answered it. The subject was the coronavirus pandemic. The question was when the U.S. might reach herd immunity, the point when enough Americans are vaccinated or have some sort of immunity because they've had and recovered from the disease, that everyone, whether vaccinated or not, is essentially protected.
I think by the end of the summer, we'll be in a very different position than we are now. As you know, I've worked very hard to make sure we have over 600 million doses of vaccine. We're going to continue to make sure that's available. We're going to increase that number across the board as well, so we can also be helping other nations once we take care of all Americans. And what's happening now is all the talk about how people were not going to get shots, they were not going to be involved. Look at what that was. We were told that was most likely to be among people over 65 years of age. But now people over 65 years of age, over 80%, have now been vaccinated, and 66% fully vaccinated. And there's virtually no difference between white, black, Hispanic, Asian American. And so because what we've done under some criticism is we have expanded access to vaccinations to familiar places, 40,000 drugstores now. Also, all of the community health centers that are available all across the nation, mobile units going out, and it's getting better and better and better. And so that's why we're leading the world. When I got elected, I said in the first 100 days, we'd get 100 million people vaccinated. I was wrong. We got 230 million vaccinated. I think we'll see, and there's a debate, you know, and I'll end with this. There's a debate into what constitutes herd immunity. Is it 70% of the population? Is it 68%? Is it 81%? The point is that by the end of the summer, right now, every single person, 16 years or older, doesn't have to wait in line, can show up and get a vaccination now. My plea to everyone, get vaccinated now, please. Thank you.
President Biden at that community college in Norfolk, Virginia. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says that as of Saturday, just over 30% of Americans have been fully vaccinated against COVID-19. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis says his state has reached the point to fully reopen. He's signing an executive order to suspend all local COVID-19 emergency orders in Florida, effectively ending all local pandemic-related restrictions in the state. Governor DeSantis held a news conference in front of a restaurant in St. Petersburg.
I'm going to sign the bill. It's effective July 1st. I'll also sign an executive order pursuant to that bill invalidating all remaining local emergency COVID orders effective on July 1st. But then to bridge the gap between then and now, I'm going to suspend under my executive power the local emergency orders as it relates to COVID. I think that's the evidence-based thing to do. I think the fact that I think folks that are saying that they need to be policing people at this point, if you're saying that, you really are saying you don't believe in the vaccines. You don't believe in the data. You don't believe in the science. We've embraced the vaccines. We've embraced the science on it. The data, I've said, has been good from the beginning in terms of clinical trials. It's even better in real life. And so it's available. We want everyone to get it. And if you get it, just know that the reason you get it is because we want to be able to have people enjoy themselves and live freely in the state of Florida. So thank you guys for doing this. I think that this was something that we don't know what's going to happen in the future, but I think this creates a structure that's going to be a little bit more respectful, I think, of people's businesses, jobs, schools, and personal freedom.
Florida Governor Ron DeSantis in St. Petersburg today. That bill he signed limits some local government powers, also prohibits so-called vaccine passports. That is, businesses, schools, government cannot require customers to show any documentation certifying COVID-19 vaccination or post-infection recovery. Up in New York, Governor Andrew Cuomo taking a slightly different approach today. He says that the state will reopen later this month. Most capacity restrictions will be lifted.
We worked with New Jersey, New York, other states on a Northeast coalition. That's how we closed down. And that's how we're going to reopen, because the same theory is true. If New York has dramatically different rules than New Jersey, than Connecticut, you'll see people driving back and forth, and that helps no one. So we've been working with a coordination plan, especially on the tri-state area. And what we've agreed on a regionally coordinated basis, beginning Wednesday, May 19th, most capacity restrictions will end across the tri-state area. That includes retail stores, food services, gyms, fitness centers, amusement and family entertainment, hair salons, barber shops, offices, etc. No capacity restrictions on all of those activities. So museums, theaters, Broadway, retail, shops. Now, they may make their own economic decision as to when they need to reopen because they can have critical mass. We're talking to Broadway. Broadway, for example, has a schedule. They have to produce a play before they can sell the play. So there's a schedule for them. But from a capacity point of view, they can all reopen on May 19th. Offices also. New York State, we have slightly different rules than the tri-state coalition. And our variances are, as we've said, outdoor food and beverage curfew is lifted on May 17th. What does that mean? Outdoor restaurants, outdoor bars. The curfew is lifted on May 17th.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, part of his news conference in Albany, the capital. On Wall Street, the Dow was up 238, NASDAQ down 67, S&P up 11. A story at MarketWatch, Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell on Monday gave a sneak peek at new data that clearly shows how, quote, those least able to bear the burden of the coronavirus pandemic were hit the hardest. 20% of adults without college degrees suffered layoffs last year versus 12% for college-educated workers, Powell said, citing data from a new report on household economics to be published later this month. More than 20% of Black and Hispanic prime-age adults were laid off, compared to 14% of similar white workers over the same period. And some 67% of Asian and Black-owned small businesses and 63% of Hispanic-owned firms had to reduce operations. That's compared to 54% for their white counterparts. You can read more at MarketWatch.com. The virus's second wave in India not showing any signs of slowing down. India has seen over 300,000 new COVID-19 infections per day for the past 10 days. Hospitals overwhelmed with the sick, the death toll averaging over 3,000 per day. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken in London to meet with the G7 foreign ministers, also met with India's Minister of External Affairs.
Let me just say I had a very good meeting with Secretary Blinken. Among the many subjects we discussed was first and foremost the strong support we're getting from the United States on dealing with the COVID situation. We are very, very appreciative for that. We also discussed how our collaboration could help globally in expanding vaccination capabilities. Other than that, there were a lot of other issues, but I think I'll leave it at that.
And just to say, first, how wonderful it is to see my friend and colleague of many years, Foreign Minister Jaishankar. We remember so well when India came to our assistance in the early days of COVID in a very important and powerful way. And we are joined in this fight together, and determined to do everything we can to help, and then for our two countries to continue to work even more closely together to help deal with what is a truly global challenge. And we had some very good discussions about that today, and as the minister said, about a number of other issues. Thank you. Very great to see you. Thank you very much.
We will be having a lot of discussions with others who had similar issues.
Thank you, guys. Please.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken and the Indian minister in London. The White House announced last week the U.S. will restrict travel from India starting tomorrow due to the rapidly rising COVID-19 caseload there and the emergence of potentially dangerous variants. Also, the Pentagon sending to India 4 large cargo planes filled with critical supplies. Speaking of the Pentagon, President Biden said on Friday that he would leave it up to the Defense Department to decide whether COVID-19 vaccines should be mandatory for U.S. troops once the vaccines get full approval from the Food and Drug Administration instead of an emergency use authorization. The president was speaking with NBC News, calling it a tough call whether the vaccine should be required. Today, the Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby asked whether any decisions have been made on this or any discussions begun.
Last week, President Biden suggested he would leave it to the military to decide whether service members would be required to get the COVID-19 vaccine. Are there any discussions going on? Is the secretary considering making the vaccine mandatory for service members?
He's not made any decisions to change it from being a voluntary vaccine. No.
In specific circumstances, is it required, such as like the C5 crew that just went to India because of the outbreak there? Would they have been required to be vaccinated?
It's still a voluntary vaccine because it's under emergency use authorization. I would remind that obviously we encourage the men and women of the department and their families to take the vaccine. We believe they're safe and effective, and all the information is publicly available about the efficacy of these vaccines. The Secretary continues to want to encourage people to elect to take the vaccine. I don't know if the crew members on those aircraft have been vaccinated or not. That wouldn't be appropriate for me to say anyway. But I'd also remind Tara that that in addition to encouraging, informing members to take the vaccine, you know, we also abide by all CDC guidelines in terms of social distancing, the wearing of masks, and basic personal hygiene. And those are requirements that are laid upon the force, no matter where you are serving in any capacity. So we still observe those CDC guidelines. The vaccines are still voluntary.
Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby. From military.com, there's this. As of last week, the DoD has administered more than 2.7 million vaccine doses to its beneficiaries, service members, family members, eligible civilian employees, and retirees. More than 779,000 troops across active duty reserves and guard have gotten at least one dose. Nearly 500,000, or 23% of the total force, are fully vaccinated. Washington Today continues in a minute. And welcome back to Washington Today. A few more headlines. War of words between Republican members of Congress and former President Donald Trump. First, Congresswoman Liz Cheney and President Trump exchanging this. President Trump putting out a statement saying the fraudulent presidential election of 2020 will be, from this day forth, known as the big lie. And then Congressman Cheney tweeting, the 2020 presidential election was not stolen. Anyone who claims it was is spreading the big lie, turning their back on the rule of law and poisoning our democratic system. Liz Cheney, one of 10 Republicans to vote to impeach President Donald Trump. And the former president celebrating Republican Senator Mitt Romney being booed by a crowd of fellow Republicans at an event last week, calling the senator a stone-cold loser. Mitt Romney was the only Republican senator to vote to impeach former President Trump twice. The Environmental Protection Agency taking a step to deal with climate change, a formal proposal to reduce the use of gases called hydrofluorocarbons, or HFCs, used in refrigerants by 85% over the next 15 years. And President Biden formally lifting the U.S. refugee cap to 62,500 this year. Associated Press says it comes, quote, weeks after facing bipartisan blowback for his delay in lifting former President Donald Trump's limit of 15,000. On immigration, the Biden administration says it's begun reuniting in the United States families which were separated at the U.S.-Mexico border under former President Trump. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas tells CBS This Morning that this is only the beginning.
We're hearing that there's good news from your department this morning, that you all have reunited four children, who were separated from their families under the Trump administration. Is that true?
That is indeed true. We expect four families to be reunited tomorrow.
How were you able to get them together? Families. How were you able to get them together? This is very important.
So this is the work of, once again, the extraordinary commitment in an all of government effort following the president's charge that this is a priority. President Biden said we must reunite these families. He directed the creation of a task force of multiple departments and agencies in an all-of-government effort. We are working very closely with the American Civil Liberties Union that has been representing the families since its inception, and other community-based organizations. This is really about an all-in public-private partnership to reunite the families and begin the healing.
So that's
very
four
proud
kids. How many?
This
how
is
many
just
more
the
left,
beginning.
How many more are left, Secretary Mayorkas? And then we've got to go. I'm just glad we're making progress on this. How many kids left?
We have
left?
Hundreds left.
Yeah.
We have hundreds of families left, and we will reunite them all.
Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas on CBS This Morning. More than 5,500 children were separated from their parents during the Trump administration going back to 2017, many of them under a zero-tolerance policy to criminally prosecute any adult who entered the country illegally. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in London meeting with his counterparts of the major industrialized nations ahead of the G7 Leaders Summit in June, which is being held in Great Britain. President Biden will be there. At a joint news conference with the British Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab, a reporter asked about a report from Iranian state-run television that deals have been reached for Iran to release U.S. and British prisoners in exchange for Iran receiving billions of dollars. Here's the answer from Secretary Raab.
On the detainees and the situation of Nazanin, obviously we're working very intensively to try and secure their release. We have been for many months. I would say that it's incumbent on Iran unconditionally to release those who are held arbitrarily and, in our view, unlawfully. And the reports, I'm afraid, are not yet accurate in terms of the suggestion of her imminent release.
British Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab referring to a very high-profile detainee in Iran. Here's the answer from U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
To Dominic's point with regard to our detained citizens in Iran, first, this is something that we raise at every opportunity. I have no higher priority than bringing arbitrarily detained Americans, American hostages, home to the United States. And that's across the board. And as Dominic said, the reports coming out of Tehran are not accurate. We are very closely engaged ourselves on this issue and will remain so. And as I said, I'm determined to bring every American home. More broadly on this, we have to take a stand against the arbitrary detention of citizens for political purposes. I applaud the work that Canada has done in this area, and Dominic and I discussed this as well today. And I would hope that with time and effort, countries could establish a norm that this practice is simply unacceptable, because it is. And I think we'll have conversations in the coming weeks and coming months about that. Countries that engage in these actions need to know that that cannot happen with impunity, and it is truly unacceptable.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken in London, joint news conference with his British counterpart. Associated Press notes about this speculation over prisoner exchange that those exchanges are not uncommon and were a feature of the 2015 nuclear accord between Iran and the world's leading powers. Secretary Blinken next travels to Kyiv to meet with top officials there. This after Russian forces in recent weeks massed along the Russian-Ukrainian border. Today is World Press Freedom Day, and U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Linda Thomas-Greenfield took part in a U.N. Security Council meeting on the subject, and then she posted a video, and it was aimed at one country, Myanmar, whose military leaders have jailed, killed, or simply disappeared dozens of journalists.
To the people of Burma, and especially the journalists in Burma, the United States stands with you. We commend the brave journalists who are circumventing the military's media ban, documenting the horrors committed by the junta, and sharing them with the world. And we condemn the arbitrary arrest and violence against journalists. Journalists must be free to report on the protest. As President Biden said, America won't back away from our commitment to human rights and fundamental freedoms. So we will continue to work tirelessly in coordination with our allies and partners to help stop the unjust detentions and human rights abuses and end this violence. And we will push for a free, open, and thriving Burma that respects the will of the people as expressed in your November 8th election. A few hours before I recorded this message, I raised these issues again with my counterparts on the Security Council, and I will keep raising them because you deserve to be heard. The United States supports you and all who strive to restore democracy and peace.
U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Linda Thomas-Greenfield, a posted video talking about the country known by both Myanmar and Burma. World Press Freedom Day today, first declared by the United Nations in 1993, and the 2021 World Press Freedom Index, compiled by the group Reporters Without Borders, says journalism is completely or partly blocked in 73% of the 180 countries that was ranked by the group. The new head of USAID, U.S. Agency for International Development, Samantha Power, sworn in today by Vice President Kamala Harris. Samantha Power spoke after for a minute.
USAID is an agency that tackles the world's hardest problems, and it's no secret that we've got a few of those on our plate right now, from COVID itself to the fallout from COVID economically setting back so many development gains that have been experienced in a positive way in recent years. Now so many of those, whether girls' education, to other vaccinations and immunizations, to economic growth, everything set back. So we have our work cut out for us, compounded by climate change, compounded by democratic backsliding. And I just feel so fortunate. I have one of the greatest workforces that I've ever encountered. They have the actual technical expertise. We've returned to evidence. We've returned to science. We have that expertise to bring to bear. So I can't wait to work with you, for you to get to know some of the members of this team. And I'm just incredibly honored by your trust in me, by President Biden's trust in me. Thank you so much. And again, thanks to my family for bearing with me these next 4 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Administrator.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations to the whole family.
Thank you.
Samantha Power, new administrator of USAID in the Eisenhower Executive Office Building, sworn in by Vice President Kamala Harris. She was confirmed, it is Samantha Power, by the Senate last week. The vote was 68 to 26. She's a former war correspondent, then became an academic focusing on genocide prevention. And under former President Obama, she was a U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. Another Biden administration official given the oath today by Vice President Harris, NASA Administrator Bill Nelson, who's a former U.S. Senator and astronaut.
To have the President and the Vice President have this kind of confidence in an old buddy from the Senate is indeed one of the high honors that anyone could have. I want to say that it's a new day in space, but we wanted not only my family to be here, but representing the former administrator, Charlie Bolden, General Bolden, 8 years under Obama, the former administrator, Jim Bridenstine, 4 years under Trump, to show the continuity and the bipartisanship with which you run the nation's space program, particularly NASA. And then I want you all also to meet my deputy, yet to be confirmed, but surely to be confirmed, Pam Melroy, an astronaut commander, one of only two women, former test pilot for the Air Force, former DARPA, and this is going to be the team that will be leading NASA. And then, of course, our children, who have grown up in this world of politics and government and public service, our son, Bill Jr., and our daughter, Nan Ellen, and of course, my rock, just like that moon rock, my rock, Grace Nelson. So thank you, Madam Vice President.
Congratulations, Mr. Administrator, and for all of the work you have done and all that you have dedicated to our country. This is gonna be a good time for you to do all that you have done and bring that intelligence and that experience to this position. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to the whole family.
Thank you.
And to the past administrators, thank you for your dedication and your work. Couldn't agree more that this has to be about our nation and what is best for our nation, unencumbered by partisan politics, but based on what we know is the right thing to do and the potential for all that we have. So thank you all. Thank you.
New NASA Administrator Bill Nelson, sworn in by Vice President Kamala Harris. The Senate unanimously confirmed Nelson last week. In addition to being in politics, Nelson flew into space in 1986 as a payload specialist aboard Space Shuttle Columbia, and former NASA Administrator Charlie Bolden, who he referenced, actually commanded that mission. Well, thanks for joining us today on Washington Today. It's available as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to download the free C-SPAN radio app to listen anywhere, anytime. Hope you have a good evening.